pleased to welcome Dennis Neufeld to the seventh version of our podcast, A Welcome Diversion. He's joined us from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and he's here today to talk to us about the logistics and the challenges of collecting electronics and delivering them safely to a place where they can be recycled. Manitoba has some interesting challenges which are unlike many other places in the country, and we're really looking forward to hearing from Dennis about some of this in terms of the challenges he faces, the way he overcomes them, and some of the opportunities that he sees before him. So without any further ado, Dennis, how are you doing today? And is it true that Winnipeg is the mosquito capital of the country?
Probably, yes.
Okay. So Dennis, tell me a little bit about logistics in the province of Manitoba. It's a large province. You've got some lakes that kind of get in the way. What other challenges do you have there?
Probably population is the top one. We've got 1.4 million for population. 60% of it lives within the capital city, and 90% of the province's population lives within a 1-hour drive of the U.S. border. So we're really concentrated on the bottom, but as per our provincial regulation, we need to satisfy the entire province of Manitoba. So yeah, we're into communities that are very small and quite challenging to get to.
So when you say small and challenging, how do you deal with those kinds of challenges? If you've got somewhere that's remote, what do you do to even locate something there? When you and I first met and you got hired to run the inaugural program in Manitoba, there were no collection sites for you and you needed to establish all of them. So how do you go about doing that?
I started in the reverse side of it. So if it was a small town, I went to that small town and found out what businesses are operating, who was there. And once I was established, it was usually the municipality or the local government that I ended up setting up the collection sites with, whether it's at a transfer station or a landfill, and then found out what trucking companies are already coming to that town, and I used it as the reverse logistics. So they're already there, they're going back empty, tapped into that market. That's the backhaul side of it. Helps me keep my costs down, and the trucks are there on a regular basis.
And what about the locations themselves? How do you source somebody who's willing to collect electronics?
That's always tough. At the beginning, it was tougher than it was, and I had to go out and source these and find locations, again, like municipalities and townships, and I had to convince them to collect electronics. And at the beginning, it was tough. But as time went on, people got to know who we were. They got to trust our program. The word got out that we're good guys to work with. Mm-hmm. People now are coming to me saying, we don't collect electronics in our community, and we want to. So it's now where I was out driving around looking for places. Now I'm just taking phone calls, and now I'm just satisfying the need that's out there. So it's gotten easier over the years.
That's a nice situation to have. What other places besides municipalities do you deal with in terms of collection?
So I've got quite a few social enterprises throughout the province. Last week I was just at one of my locations called Equal Opportunities West, and it's a location where it's set up for adults with intellectual disabilities, and they do collections for us. They're a fantastic partner for our program. So we've got social enterprises. I'm even dealing with First Nations groups and remote First Nation groups.
So if we think about the kind of process from start, what we started with was we've got a bunch of collection sites around the province. How many would you have?
Today I have 102.
That's terrific, that really is. So 102 sites across the province of Manitoba where people can drop off electronics. Yeah. And we know that the success factors for us are access and awareness.
Yes.
So access at 102 is good.
Yes.
Awareness is something that we work on so people know they have to bring things back. But we've started to build the process now. We've established a site. We've gone out and talked to municipalities, to various community organizations, and we've built a network of 102. We've now built a pallet and put it on a trailer. What happens now?
Now I need to haul that back in, and I'm really fortunate that I have a processor located in Manitoba. So I'm dealing with lower costs for my transportation, and then it heads straight in as a truckload, so I don't have consolidation centers. So we go right from my depot right to the processor. So we skip a couple steps that others have to deal with, and also reduce a lot of my costs as well.
Sure.
So it allows me to run a less costly program, and then I can work directly with my processor. So again, it's local. I can jump in my vehicle and drive and meet them on a regular basis. So it really helps the rapport, and I have a really good working relationship with the management and the staff. The staff on the floor, they all know me because I'm there on a regular basis.
And it's probably even easier for you to get there now that they're just outside Winnipeg as opposed to LA or Morden when we were down a little further south in the province.
That's correct. Yeah.
So Dennis, ice roads are something that are quite unique in Canada and particularly in Manitoba. So tell me a little bit about that, because EPRA does, I think, an amazing job of getting product out of the far north. It's something that really differentiates us from many other programs and I think is a credit to some of the things that you do. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, so in Manitoba, we have 17 First Nation communities that do not have year-round road access. So they're serviced by ice roads. And we are working in those communities getting product out. So what ends up happening is the roads are built over a number of months, obviously after things start to freeze. And there is anywhere from a 3 to 5 week window for the trucks to go in to bring, whether it's construction material or fuel oil, to come in. And what we've done is when we want to get stuff out of there, we tap into those vehicles coming back. So we call it the backhaul program, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
And so we need to coordinate with the materials going in. But when it gets there, the truckers need to, as you watch it on TV, they call it turn and burn. And they want to unload materials, turn around, and get out. So the materials have to be staged and ready to go. So we can't start thinking about collecting electronics and other items the day before the trucks arrive. The communities start working on this in summer already. So we're already working on this project in March and April of the year, what the communities are going to be collecting throughout the year. So yes, my focus is electronics, but there's no way that we can fill a trailer and bring that trailer full back of just electronics. So we had to go out and find partners in it. So I work with some of the other stewardships within Manitoba. And what we want to do is we want to maximize the trailer because we're paying for that full trailer coming back. And the cost is $5,000 now to bring one trailer back. So we want to make sure that it is full. So there's electronics in there. We use the tires as dunnage to stop things from moving around on the bumpy roads coming back. And we were even to the point now, after 8 years, we've moved as many stewardship material legacy waste out as possible. So now, instead of saying we're only going to go back to those communities every other year, they're doing so much work in communities and such good work in those communities. We don't want to lose the momentum we've built up. So we've committed to go in there each and every year to get these materials out. So now we had to bring in other partners. So we've gone out and now we've got Indigenous Services Canada helping out, and we're bringing out non-steward material, that we're calling it. And so we're finding nice big heavy things to come out. So now we're doing washers and dryers and stoves, anything that doesn't have Freon in it right now. We'll get to that at a later date. And we're maximizing those trucks. And then they bring them out on the winter road, and then we have to split them up when they get back to Winnipeg. So it can have various materials from oil to car batteries to our electronics in there. And then they have to be split in Winnipeg and go to their respective locations to be recycled.
And if you think about the environmental impact that this is having, if you'd have gone to those communities 10 years ago before your program was in place, you'd have found huge piles of abandoned materials, whether it's stoves or washers or fridges or whatever. And the fact that you're able to remove those, as well as the obligated products that we're getting out, is really a very positive step for the environment. And it helps from an economic perspective as well, because there's going to be materials that can be recycled there. Some of those things have metal in them that's valuable that can be recycled, and stainless steel and whatever else that will come out. So those are really encouraging stories.
They are, and there's even one even larger encouraging story, and that's the community pride that we're doing. The communities, stuff comes into these communities and it never leaves. And some of the stuff, it's sitting around and it's building up. And when we can move trailer loads of material out of community to be recycled, there is incredible community pride on this. And what started off is just a couple of First Nation communities is grown again, there's so much in other communities saying, wow, look at what they're doing over there. Mm-hmm. We want to do the exact same thing. And so now it's just built and it's just steamrolling. We've got so much momentum in Manitoba that we're just riding that wave right now.
That's terrific. Now, tell me a little bit about Churchill, because I recall a story about the rail not being accessing Churchill for a period of time. So tell me how you managed through all of that.
Yeah, Churchill is a unique one. Churchill does not have a road going in, but it has a rail going in. And I can't remember the year, I think it was 2016, where there was flooding in northern Manitoba and it took the rail line out. And that was the only access for the community other than air to get into. And when I was up there setting up the depot, there was no rail access. And it was a real challenge. And again, that was the communities, or they're just building up all these items. And they kept saying, when the rail is done, we will do something. So sure. they found a large warehouse up there and we're storing all these items. And we just made arrangements with trucking companies that worked with rail companies that as soon as the rail was open, we moved 3 semi-trailers of electronics out within 12 months of the rail reopening. But again, that's the town pride there as well. It's huge in Churchill, and they just knew that this stuff can't be thrown in the garbage. It needs to be recycled, and they will wait for us. And when they were ready, we were ready, and we moved it out of there. And again, it was another really good news story for northern Manitoba.
It is a great story, and I also think it's one of the strengths that EPRA provides. The fact that we have people in each province who are local, who interface with municipal governments, who know the community, who in essence speak the language of that particular distinct area, is a real strength of the organization, because it allows us as an organization across Canada to be able to tap into these kinds of places that me sitting in Toronto would never be aware of. I would never make those connections. I would never have those kinds of contacts. And it's a credit to you and the other directors across the country who are able to establish those kinds of things and allow us to be able then to take advantage of moving electronics back and safely recycling them.
Yeah, and our regulators, you're absolutely right. They respect our program, they know our program, and that opens up so many doors and makes so many invitations to people that I'm invited to so many places. Churchill is just one of them.
Sure.
And that it all started off with an introduction from the province.
Churchill's still on my list. I've been to a lot of places in Manitoba, but Churchill's still on my list. So now we get things back to the processor, and they arrive down in Winnipeg. And here we go. Now what happens with it?
So that was another challenge, because some of the materials, again, we've got different stewardships. We've got some that have dangerous goods in them. And you just can't unload dangerous goods at any dock. It has to be a certified facility. So it's come down to, we ran out of locations that were going to work with us. And we ended up this year helping. We hired a consultant to help get a location that wanted to work with us that wasn't certified to handle dangerous goods. He helped us certify them this year.
Okay.
So we're even at the point where we're helping the trucking companies get their certification to handle this material, because it is just getting so hard to do. And then they have to break it down, and then it's a matter of tires go one way, oil drums go another way, my electronics go another direction, and that's the dance at the end, getting it out of the trailer and back to its proper home.
Well, that's terrific. And so now, as this material is now sorted and you've got pure electronics along with your full trailer loads of electronics, they go to your processor in Winnipeg. What does he do with it?
So they are actually a fantastic facility, and they do everything. They will disassemble, and they don't just do a portion of it and send it to other downstreamers. When they're done with it, it is back to commodity. So they are taking the old CRTs right back down to the leaded glass and to the steel, and the same thing with the other electronics. It is right back to commodity grade, and they tell me that they're at 99% purity on their aluminum. So their aluminum is coming out almost as pure virgin aluminum.
That's terrific. That really is. And from a recycling percentage, do they give you a number with respect to how much of the material comes back can be reused?
They're telling me that it's in the high 80s to low 90s of the percent, and it's always fluctuating, and again, just depending upon what they've got. But they're finding homes for everything, even the fluff that they used to pay to get rid of. That's the grind that comes out of the plastic grind. They used to pay for that, and when they pay for it, we pay for it.
Sure.
And they found a place that now a couple of the landfills are using it as cover. They've got specific materials coming into the landfill, and they love this grind, so they're accepting it for free. So again, if they don't have to pay to get rid of it, I don't have to pay to get rid of it.
And everybody wins.
And everybody wins. So everybody is just trying to take that next step and to find homes for everything. Instead of, if it can't be recycled and back to commodity, we need to put it in the right place. And even if it's a landfill item, it's a useful landfill item.
No, that's great. That really is. It really adds to the circularity in terms of our economy and how we think about things. Now, as you now reflect on your 10-year anniversary, because you've just completed 10 years in the province, and it's hard to believe that, you know, you and I sat down in a hotel boardroom doing interviews that long ago. But here we are, 10 years later. What do you see in terms of your history? What do you reflect on when you think about the past 10 years?
Boy, first of all, it doesn't feel like 10 years.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't. And I guess it's just because I'm having fun doing it. But yeah, we talked about it at the beginning. It was a bit of a grind to find those early depots, and it was a lot of work. And as time went on, building rapport with communities and other communities talking about our program and making my job so much easier, that's a huge milestone that I think. And just meeting so many people along the way throughout the province. I have depots in all of the landfills, and I keep telling my wife that I can go to any landfill in Manitoba and I'll know the people there. So I have lots of friends in different places.
It is great when you establish those relationships, and I think it's a credit to you in terms of the dedication that you show with going out and visiting these locations, and whether it's retraining or whether it's just doing a check-in to make sure that the signage is up and people know that they can recycle things, is a credit to the work that you do in the province. It really does speak well to kind of the history of what's gone on there over the past 10 years. As you look forward and think about the next 10 years, what do you think Manitoba's going to look like? How are you anticipating things?
Yeah, Manitobans are, I'd say we're cautious. So there's not a lot of change. I wish that the change would come a little faster than it has, but I think the future holds more items for us. I'm always asked about certain items. Can we recycle this? It's not on our list. And we're a little slower. We used to, when we were out of the gate, we were ahead of other provinces in the items that we took with our microwave ovens and photocopiers. And now other provinces have passed us. And I think now there's an appetite within the province to expand our accepted items. So I really see small appliances, and boy, who knows where the next greatest item is. Maybe we're into wearables and things like that. But I really look forward to being the home, because people, they expect now that there should be a recycling avenue at the end of the life of their items. And I think that we can provide that for them, and they look to us and say, well, why can't you recycle it? And we absolutely can, and we should be those ones, and that's where I see us going.
And operationally, that's something that you'd be ready for, I would expect, not an issue for you in terms of if products get added from a regulatory perspective?
No, and it's not. And again, because I move truckloads, I don't have the restraint on the size. We can take anything, small items, big items, they all just go into the bags, and our processor can look after everything. So nothing is a challenge. I don't see anything holding us back.
Well, and as you say, I mean, it's one of the things that happens, and it seems to be geographic. Yourself and Saskatchewan seem to mirror each other in terms of obligated products. We see that Atlantic Canada does much of the same thing. So when a province leapfrogs another, there seems to be a bit of a competitive nature to the regulators that say, how come they have such and such a product and we don't, and then we can catch up.
Exactly.
So there is that nature
yes.
of things. And so I do understand, because you know, you get a province like British Columbia, where everything with a battery and a plug is obligated. And then it really does vary across the rest of the country in terms of what's obligated and what's not. We recently just added wearables in the province of Quebec. So yeah. That reference that you made is a good one, because it's something along with 3D printers that just got added there. On the other hand, in British Columbia, we just added electronic bikes. So, you know, you never know what's coming next, and we just need to be prepared for it. And I'm sure you will be.
Yes.
Good. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Dennis. It's been terrific spending time with you and talking about the challenges that you have. I do think that as we look forward to the next 10 years, you and I have got a lot of work to do, but it'll be fun to continue that journey and to work towards recycling whatever the regulators decide to send our way. I know that I personally am looking forward to those next 10 years to see how successful we can be and how we can continue this great story that we have together. So thank you so much for being with us today, and best of luck in the province of Manitoba.
I always like to talk about the Manitobans. Thanks for having me.
Welcome Diversion is brought to you by EPRA Recycle My Electronics. To find the location nearest you, visit recyclemyelectronics.ca. The future is in your hands. Don't let it go to waste.